Okay, so let's summarize what we saw last time. So last time we introduced the Gaussian model, which is a model where I have a real number that goes from minus to plus infinity, which is like a continuous spin, right? Instead of just minus one plus one, now it's a real number from minus to plus infinity. I have one spin per position of my lattice. My lattice can have like L to the D points, hypercubic lattice. So X is a vector of integers where each integer goes from zero to L minus one. L is again the same as 0, right? And L plus 1, L is the same as 1, and L plus 1 is the same as 2, and so on. So it is periodically identified. And what's the Hamiltonian? The Hamiltonian is the exponential of an interaction between position x and position x prime. But in fact, it's only nearest neighbors, because we chose this A to be such that there is a weight when x is equal to x prime, and another weight when x prime minus x equal to 1. Now, in the lecture, we have the u here and the t here. So what have I done? I have just rescaled s so that this becomes 1. Okay? So we are setting u equal to 1 in this lecture to have one less constant. But you agree that because we are just integrating over s, if I just rescale s by square root of u, I get rid of u. And then this t would be t of last lecture over square root of u, or over u. Because there are two s. This t would be t over u, right? It is just that there are no two independent constants. I can always rescale one of them away, because s is a real number. Okay, so today, u equal to 1. In other words, this t is t of the last lecture over u. And we chose to have just nearest neighbors, but that was not crucial. We could have any function of the difference. And then we saw that once we go to Fourier modes, we get a totally decoupled expression where we have just a partition function for each Fourier mode, which is 2 pi divided by the Fourier transform of the interaction. And here all we used was that the interaction was a function of the difference. Now, because the function of the difference is very simple for us, we can compute its Fourier transform exactly, and it gives this. This is the Fourier transform. So it is literally just the product over all possible momenta that are quantized, according to this. That's the Brillouin zone. And we have square root of 2 pi divided by a of t. Okay? Any question here? Let me make one comment that I was a little bit fast the other day, was that here I wrote product in Fourier, there I wrote product in position, and I don't put any Jacobian between the two. I just wrote the go-directly position, and then Fourier, and nothing, no Jacobians. So there were two reasons for doing this. One is that even if there was a Jacobian, who cares? That's just overall normalization. So that's reason number one. So even if there was a Jacobian, I would not write it. But the second reason is that there was no Jacobian, because we remember that we chose the normalization carefully, such that the norm was invariant under Fourier. So there's no Jacobian. It is really just a rotation with unit. Okay? So not only we don't care, but it's actually correct. Of course, this 2 pi, it's an example of that normalization. If I were to define my model, let's do it in a different color. And that's what we are going to do today. If I were to define my model by saying that my measure, I put an extra square root of 2 pi, then here there would be an extra square root of 2 pi. And here, I would just cancel the 2 pi. Okay. So that's just, then it would become, then this normalization, if I put this simple chosen measure, this normalization here would be 1, if I have this extra 2 pi. Otherwise, it's some constant there, some products of 2 pi. And multiplying this normalization, what did we compute then? So we have product for each Fourier mode, which means exponential of sum for each Fourier mode. And when the length is large, that sum I can replace by an integral. This 1/2 is because of the square root there, right? So square root is exponential of 1/2 of logarithm. So the 1/2 from the square root, and then logarithm of the Fourier transform. And then we notice that, well, but this is exactly what we had obtained in another lecture by summing over all possible paths, t to the length of the path. Now, if the path can go like this, and if it counts like 2, we should put a 1/2 if we count orientation, or don't put 1/2 if we don't count orientation. Okay? If we count orientation, this path and the path in opposite direction, each would contribute. And so they would get factor of 2, we put a 1/2, so that this factor drops out. Right? In other words, when we define the sum over paths, we put explicitly a 1 over twice the length. Remember when we summed, that 1/2 there is this 1/2 here. Okay? So that's to take into... Okay. Now, then we went on to compute not only the partition function, but something more physical, like the correlation function between two spins. And we said that the correlation function between two spins, if we go to Fourier, it's very easy to compute because the Fourier mode Q and Q prime, they are independent. And so the only way I can get an N0 result is if Q plus Q prime is equal to 0. Now, this is a general result because I have translation invariance, right? And when you have translation invariant, you have momentum conservation. Is this first statement fair? The fact that you have translation invariant means that any correlation function in Fourier space of Q1, Q2, Q3, Q4 is non-zero only if the Qs add up to 0. Is this statement obvious? Let's see why. Why is this statement true? Because suppose I apply a translation of my system by some constant vector, right? What happens to an expression in Fourier? So each Fourier mode is a sum over positions, e to the position times momentum, blah, 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 right? And so when I shift all positions by a constant, an expression in Fourier is multiplied by e to the sum of momenta times the shift, right? So an expression in Fourier, so let's write. An expression in Fourier, SQ1, SQ2, under a shift, if I shift my lattice, right, each of this guy is a sum over positions, e to the I, q times position. I shift the position, I pick an exponential factor. So it becomes the same thing times an exponential factor of the shift, a times the sum of all the momenta. Right? And so if I have translation invariance, this must be zero. Right? If I want to have an invariance under a shift. And therefore, the momenta need to be opposite to each other. Okay? Now, the way we saw it in the lecture was more explicitly. We just saw them in a more pedestrian way. I just said it's real part square, imaginary part square. But it's a particular case of a much more general statement. If I have a system that's translation invariance, momenta is conserved. Okay? Okay? So momentum conservation is a consequence of translation invariance. Okay. Now that Q is equal to Q prime, this expression becomes very simple to compute, becomes just the average of SQ, S minus Q, which is the inverse of this Fourier transform A of Q. And here is an expression. This is an equal sign. And now let me emphasize that here we have no approximation. So this is totally exact, right? Meaning X minus Y can be 5, and the lattice can be 13 by 13. Right, so we have a 13 by 13 lattice, and the lattice and the separation between the points is 7. Right, totally. Now, what is the approximation here? When can I go from the sum over Brillouin zone to an integral over moment?
If L is large.
So here, we are doing L large. Right. So the lattice is very big, but we still see the lattice. It's like you have a big grid, but you are zooming in and you see clearly the points of the lattice. But the lattice is infinite, but the distance is still comparable to the lattice spacing. And so you still see the lattice. So here, all we did is L large. What do we do from here to here? So L large, and what else? Sorry?
T? The T that you wrote there?
This T? No. So what we did here, remember technically from going from here to here?
Q small,
which corresponds to what?
The large.
Large what, yeah? Large? You are right. So here is when L is large and? when is this approximation good? When should I expand the momenta around small momenta? Right? So the idea was that this is when it's dominated by small momenta, which corresponds to, in terms of our original quantity there on the left?
Large distances.
So this is L large and x minus y much bigger than 1, where this 1 is the lattice spacing, right? And what about this? Here, this is when the distance is really large, not only much larger than the lattice spacing, but much larger than the effective correlation length. So here, it's really the asymptotically large distance, where I furthermore have that x minus y is much bigger than my correlation length m. So that's really a tail. And so here, at this equal sign, is where we are in field theory here. Right? Our lattice is huge, so it's infinite dimensional space-time, so our space is huge. And we are much bigger than the lattice spacing, so we are in the continuum. We don't see the details of the lattice, we don't see the sites, right? So we are at a separation, thousand of a thousand sites, so we don't see, we are already in a continuum, and the lattice is infinite, right? So that's where we are in the field theory limit. And indeed, just this morning, the last formulas you saw in Dan's lecture was exactly this formula in quantum field theory. It was exactly this propagator, right? It was exactly this, when d is equal to 4 for you, and it was exactly this expression here, right? What was the difference with respect to Dan's lecture?
There's a minus sign on the inner product, right, on our case.
The difference here, so indeed, this matches perfectly with Dan's lecture, right? If we change q0 to minus to iq0. Because there, we were doing Minkowski. And so the q square was q0 square minus the space part of q square, right? So what we are doing here, in this relation here, this is like saying that our time tau goes to it, right? Rotating the component q0 by I is like rotating the conjugate variable by I. So it's what's called a weak rotation, is you go from time to imaginary time. And that's exactly what you do from going from quantum mechanics to statistical mechanics, right? So here, we are in quantum mechanics. And in tau, we are in statistical mechanics. So that's the usual Euclidean time versus Lorentzian time thing. Okay? And because we are in statistical mechanics, we don't have any I epsilons here. Our pole, we don't have poles here, we just don't worry about poles, about these I epsilons, which you were worrying about, that they are physical and they are related to causality and they are related to quantum mechanics. Okay? Now that's the same thing. And moreover, if you remember, this quantity here was also given by the sum over paths. And you remember how I computed, how we computed this object. So this was a sum over paths. It depended on t and on the separation, x minus y, right? And you remember that one of the ways that we computed this generating function was by noticing that this generating function was the inverse of our matrix A, right? Remember, this was one of the ways we computed this, was by noting that if I act with my A on my G, I get a Kronecker delta, right? Yes? But what is this statement? What is this A? This A couples nearest neighbors, right? It's saying x minus x prime. So when you are in the field theory limit, this coupling of nearest neighbors is like a Laplacian. It's the discrete version of the Laplacian. So if I take the field theory limit, this would become, this A would become something like Laplacian plus some constant acting on G equal, and then this delta function would become a Kronecker real delta function. Here I'm being too fast. I'm just giving you a flavor of the argument. So it would say that G is the inverse of this Laplace operator. In other words, it's a Green's function. And that's also exactly what you saw in Dan's lecture, right? The very end of Dan's lecture was the statement that his propagator was a Green's function. Okay? And we saw indeed that this was one of the ways that we solved this propagation was by noticing that what we wanted to do was to invert this matrix A. Okay? So we did it in the discrete, and then we took a continuum limit. We could have started directly in the continuum, and then we would have landed directly on this expression. Okay, good. Any questions about, yeah?
We have a t here, which can be seen as a time, right? Because it's the number of steps somehow given after a time t or something.
In the random walk picture, yes. In our picture of the Gaussian model, no.
Okay. But is there a way to relate the random walks and this t with an external parameter somehow in the quantum field theory?
If I can rephrase your question, I think you are asking about how do we see this duality and how do we see this time emerging and so on, but that's exactly what the lecture is about.
Awesome.
Right? That's what we said we were going to see. Okay. So we want to understand, so our goal for today, our main goal is to understand these formulas, why this duality is here. Right, is to understand these equalities which have this duality statement here. Why is it true that the partition function at this starting point is equal to this expression? Right. So what we want to understand is how to go directly from here. We want to understand how to go from here to here. Right. So that's our goal for today. Right. Is to start from the Gaussian model and understand why is the Gaussian model given by this sum over closed paths. Okay. Okay, so let me summarize today. Okay, so today we want to start to show that Gaussian model is equal to random walks. Then I want to say a few words about high T expansions in general models, because we will see that the way we will understand this duality is through an IT expansion, and then I will make a few comments about what changes when we do high T expansions in other models. And then I'll say a few comments about one of these other models, which is on the XY model. And I want to make a few comments because basically to give some introduction for the tutorial, where in the tutorial we will be studying this XY model. And by the way, let me just make a comment that this week the most relevant references are Parisi and Feynman from the reference list that I gave you. We'll be mostly following those. Not exactly, but if you want two references for this week, it would be this Parisi and Feynman. And today Parisi mostly. Yeah. So it's a gradient. It's mostly Parisi in the beginning of the week, mostly Feynman in the end of the week. So we will switch. Okay?
Pedro?
Yes?
I have a question. Is that you're saying that A, if we take the, go to the continuum limit, we can reduce to the Klein-Gödel equation. Like,
yes.
But how can we see it from that expression? I mean, if we have a general A, then it's probably okay. But if you have that explicit, I don't see, like, how do you get rid
of it? Okay. So the question is, how do we see the connection between A and Laplacian? So I can do it quickly. So let's see. So A is equal. Let's write it like this. Let's say it's delta x minus x prime equal to 0, right? And then it's plus t delta x minus x prime equal to 1. In other words, A acting on some function at some distance x prime, right? A of x and x prime, sum over x prime. So we multiply our matrix by some function. Right? I can write it in the following way, is equal. Let's look at this term. This term says that it's t times sum of my function f applied to x plus or minus some e mu, where I sum over mu and plus minus, right? But then let me do the following. Let me write it like this. Let me put a 1 over 2d. Then I should put a 2d here, not to lie, right? And let me do the following. Let me open this up and write minus f at x. But this is not exactly true. There was no such term there. It was just the first term. So I should add it. So plus f of x times 2dt, right? That's this term. But there was this one here. So plus 1. And this is the definition of a discrete Laplacian, right? This goes directly to del square f when we take the continuum limit, right? If I replace this by derivatives, right? Is it clear? Or still a bit too fast? I can do it a little bit slower. So if you put here a is equal to 1, right? So if you think you are at large distances, it's like your series expand in A, right? So if your series expand in A, this becomes A square times Laplacian. So when you put A to 0, this term cancels this. The linear term in A also cancels because of symmetry, because it's plus minus. And the A square term gives directly the Laplacian. Okay? And large distances is like small a. And so this operator goes in the continuum limit to some number times the Laplacian plus some other number. Any other question? Okay, so let's show this duality. And the first thing we are going to do is write our z as an integral of a product over all points of the lattice. And then let's say that we have an integration, let's call it d mu, that depends on spin s at position x, some measure. And what is this d mu? Let's define d mu of s to be just ds, but let's put the Gaussian here, e to the minus s square over 2. Okay. So that's my definition. So it's a normalized integral. And what we want to say is that this integral, right? Let's keep an analogy. This integral would be the analog of saying 1/2 of sum of s equal plus minus 1, right? So that would be an example, right? In fact, it could be exactly equal to this if d mu of s would be equal to ds times delta function s plus 1 plus delta function s minus 1. So if instead of Gaussian I were to replace by this, then I would be describing the Ising model instead of the Gaussian model, right? So we describe the same thing. We are describing the two models at once if we use this notation. Because if you choose d mu to be ds times Gaussian, it will be the Gaussian model. If you choose d mu to be ds times delta functions, it would be the Ising model. Okay? But then what is the interaction? We take off from the interaction from A. This term now belongs to the measure when they are the same. And so this is the only term that remains now. Right? So we have this d mu s exponential of 1/2 times sum of times, let's put t over 2 times sum of x and y, which are neighbors, as x prime. And if I sum over neighbors, then the x, x prime, when I swap them, it's the same pair, so then there's no over 2. Right? Because there is x, y like this, and the other one where they are swapped, that's the same thing, so it cancels the over 2. And so you see that then it's really clear, right, that it's exactly the Ising model, right? If I call this Tj, then this was the Hamiltonian of the Ising model, right? So it's not just almost the same, it's exactly the same. So if I use this measure, then I'm doing the Gaussian model. If I use this measure, I'm doing the Ising model. Right? Let's be even more careful. Let's say that I put square root of 2 pi here. Then you see that with both measures, integral d mu of s of 1 equal to 1, right? For both. The Ising model, when I put the 1 half there, by the way, here there will be a 1 half, right? And for the Gaussian model, that they are both normalized such that for a single spin, the integral is 1. If not, it's just some overall normalization. It's not a big deal. Okay. Now, the idea, this is our starting point, right? So this is our, we start here. So here I just rewrote the first equality. So we'll start here. This is our Ising model or Gaussian model. For now, unless you specify the measure, it's true for both. And we are going to do a high temperature expansion, to write it in the high temperature expansion. And high temperature means small t. I'm not going to do an approximation, it's an expansion. I'm going to keep all terms, but write it in a way that is particularly suitable if t is small. Okay. So, yeah, actually, why did I do this? Still have space. So, what is this? When t is small, so this is the integral. Product over all positions, d mu of s. And then we just write this exponential as a sum. So, sorry, first, let's write this as product over neighbors. Let me change notation not to carry so many vectors. Let's go to this notation where we say this is I, this is j, and then this would be just neighbors ij, right? Where we know I is a label, is a point on the lattice. So then I have product over I and j, right? Of exponential of t s I s j, and this is just the sum from in 0 to infinity, but I will have many sums. So for this, I use the integer nij that goes from 0 to infinity, t to the nij over nij factorial, si sj to the power nij. So I just throw the exponential as a sum of terms. Like this, right? And so we see that that our z is equal. Now, product of sum is, I can swap sum and product. In other words, when I open up that product over I and j, for each link ij, I have some power of t. Right? You agree? And so I have a sum over for each n ij runs from 0 all the way to infinity. And then I have a product over all neighbors I and j. Of that, so t to the n ij, n ij factorial, and then si sj to the power nij, right? And all this is integrated. Integral over d mu s1 tak 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 tak. Okay. And so the idea now is to think that we are choosing an integer for each connection I and j. In other words, let's put here 1, 2. We want to think that this represents the empty connection between I and j. And this one would now represent a stick between I and j. And this two would now represent two sticks between I and j. And so on. And so what we end up with is also a summation, right? When I expand that product, so for each exponential, I choose some power of t. It's like saying for each connection, I choose how many sticks I put. So we have again a gas of sticks, but now we can put more than just 0 or 1. We can put any number of sticks in any connection. Okay? And so what we have is, let's write it down. Okay? So this sum here will become the summation over sticks, okay. Allowing more than one per link.
How you switch the order of the product and the sum, because they both have I and j.
Yeah, so let's see, how do I explain that? So that's just distributive, just the distribution law for product and sum. You can, one way of seeing is take one term from here. It's clearly one term there. Vice versa, take one term from there. It's clearly one term here. So you just show that they come. It's 1 to 1 with coefficient 1, so it's unequal. Okay? But it's just distribution law. It's just that maybe the notation is not the easiest one, but it is. Now, here, we see that what happens now the idea is like in the Ising model, what we want to do is do explicitly the integration over spins. Right? Our goal is to get rid of this integration so that we get a statistical model for the sticks only. Right? So the goal is to integrate out the spins. And in this way, get a partition function for the sticks only. Right now we have sticks and spins. It's like we are just complicating things. We had a simple interaction, now we describe it with sticks. Now we want to get rid of the spin. Well, but that's very easy. Because we just need to integrate some power of the spin. What power? So as far as the spin dependence goes, right? This is equal. Okay, so let me write, let me say this product here. Let's do this thing here. This bracket here is equal to a product over links I and j, t to the nij over nij factorial, so I did nothing here. But then this product over I and j, let me write it like this, product over I si to the ni, just this, where what is ni? Ni is how many times si appears. And how many times does si appear? Right? How many times does this spin here appear? This one here. Well, it's once per each stick that is here, 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 and here. Each of these neighbor sticks contribute gives an si. So this ni is just a sum over j, which is neighbor to I, of n I j. Right? It is just how many. For example, if I have two sticks here, no stick here, no stick here, and one stick here, right? This is two, one, and nothing. Here, in this case, n I would be equal to three. Right? So that's Ni. And therefore, it factorizes completely, right? It just factorizes completely. So the integration over the spins is very simple. The integration over the spin, so that's what we get after we get rid of the integration over the spin. We just transform this into the product over I of the expectation value of s to the ni under this measure mu. Right? Notice that here it's the average, so I remove the index I from s. It is just some average of this ni. And what is this average? This average is just the integral d mu of s to the ni divided by the integral d mu of s of 1, that is equal to 1, and this, let's call this m index ni. Yes?
You completely lost, like, because we were opening brackets and I don't know where we were. So we started here doing this product, and then when did you go to the integral part? Can you just re-explain that? Right, so we started here talking about the product.
Okay, so here we have product. We have integral of spin 1, spin 2, spin 3, spin 4.
Mm-hmm.
And then the spins appear s1 to some power, s2 to some power, s3 to some power.
Yeah.
So those integrals, just integral of s1 times s1 to its power.
Okay.
Integral of s2 times s2 to its power. Integral of s3 and so on. Right? So each s to the power times the integral just gives average of s to that power.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, so far, you see, this is totally general. It works for any measure. But this is a good time now to specify that we are doing the Gaussian model. So far, this is totally general. So let's write the general expression right now before we specify the Gaussian model. Before we specify the Gaussian model, we would conclude that the partition function equal to the sum over configurations of R sticks, right? With sum over configurations of R sticks, R can be 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, right? And then some weight that depends on the configuration And this weight is equal to what? Let's write it down. This weight is equal to the product over ij t to the nij over nij factorial. So this is the number of sticks between I and j, right? You agree? So for example, summation of n ij phi sum over I and j is r, the total number of sticks. And then I have product over I m index ni, where ni is the number of sticks leaving or touching sides I. In other words, ni equal to a sum over j of nij, and sum over all I of ni equal to r. More precisely, not exact, probably there's a factor of two, right? Because I count twice. So if I have just one stick and I have one, this sum would give two, so 1/2, and this sum would be equal to r. And when we mean this, that this sum here, it's a sum over connections. If I sum over I and j, I also overcount. So this is, I don't count n12 and n21 twice. I count just once. Okay? And so this is the weight, right? This is the weight. This is true in any model where this mn is in a different, in each model, it's something different, is the average of s to the n with the measure mu. So what is it, for example, for Ising model? For Ising model, what is the average of S to the n for the Ising model? Right? We saw this already, right? So the average of a spin to a power in the Ising model, what was it? There were two possibilities. If the power is odd, it's zero. And if the power is even, s squared is one, so it's average of one, which is one. So this is, for Ising, this is just delta n even. So it is just one if n is even, zero if n is odd. Now, what about in the Gaussian model? In the Gaussian model, mn equal to the integral of s to the n in a Gaussian, which gives n minus 1 double factorial if n is even, and it's equal to zero if n is odd. So let me recall this, but this is what you saw in the homework, that the expectation value of x to the n in the Gaussian is just equal to this. But let me just recall that this is just a statement that the integral ds, as this is just what this integral is, e to the minus s squared over 2 divided by the integral ds e to the minus s squared over 2, right? Is equal to this. Now, is this result familiar to everyone, or should I derive it? It was in the homework, but if you want, I can derive it. But it is just, so first, that it is zero when n is even, it's obvious, right? Because this function is even, so when n is odd, it's obviously zero, right? But when n is even, that it's equal to this. Is this obvious? Or should I explain? Should I explain? Okay, so let me do it in a way that is probably not, that is, so okay, let me raise the blackboard first. So let's, so one very simple way of doing it is just notice that integral dx e to the minus x squared over 2. So this is equal to square root of 2 pi. Right? So this one I don't need to do, right? So this one you know well. Now, let's do a slightly more complicated one. Integral dx e to the minus a x squared over 2. Then this is just if I rescale a by square x by square root of a, it just becomes equal to the same thing. So this is just square root of 2 pi over a. In fact, this is what we used here, right? So just square root of 2 pi over a. And therefore, if I want to bring down x squared, I just take the derivative with respect to a, right? So if I want to bring down x squared, I do minus twice derivative with respect to a of this expression. The minus, the derivative with respect to a brings minus x squared over 2. The minus 2 cancels the 1 half. And I get exactly the integral I want with the x squared. So if I do the derivative with respect to a of this integral divided by this integral, this is the expectation value of x squared. And so when I do it, I take the derivative, and what do I conclude? I conclude that this expectation value of x squared is derivative of a to the minus a half gives minus 2. This is the minus 2 that is there. And then derivative with respect to a, 1 over square root of a. So let's do this. We take this derivative, and after we take this derivative, we set a equal 1. Right? And therefore, this is equal to just 1 over a to the 3 half when a equal to 1, which is equal to 1. Okay, so that's the expectation value of x squared. It's equal to 1. Now, if I want the expectation value of x to the 4, what I should do is do this twice. I do minus 2 dda, then minus 2 dda of our integral. Each time I do this minus 2 dda, I bring down x squared. And then, just to normalize it properly, I divide by our integral. This is just to remove some 2 pi's. And then I set a equal to 1. You agree? So let's see. So the first time we took a derivative, we got this a to the 3 halves. And now I take a derivative again, and now something interesting happens. Is that the 3 halves, when I take the derivative, gives the 3 halves outside that I multiply by the 2. And so this gives, right? This gives 2 times 3 halves, which is equal to 3. Right? That's because I took another derivative and I got the 3 halves. But before I got this, let me write even more carefully. It becomes, okay, it becomes 2 times 3 halves times 1 over a to the 5 halves when a equal to 1, which is equal to 3. Right? And now you see that if I take one more derivative with 2 times dda, I pick a 5. And if I take 2 times dda, I pick a 7. And so on and so forth. Right? So we conclude that expectation value of x squared was equal to 1. Expectation value of x to the 4 was equal to 3. But now if I continue, if I do it once more, for example, I would conclude that expectation value of x to the 6 would be 5 times 3. And then there would be 7 halves there, so expectation value of x to the 8 would be 7 times 5 times 3, etc. And that's the definition of double factorial, right? So the expectation value of x to the n is equal, you see, it's just the n minus 1 double factorial. Okay, so that's what it is, x minus 1 double factorial. And so that's the weight of this configuration. The weight of this configuration is this product where this is just ni minus 1 double factorial. Okay, now this arrow here is for the Gaussian model. For the Ising model, it's this. Okay. So here is our weight. So we sum over sticks, there are no more spins. But for each stick configuration, I have this weight here. Question? Yes?
Are we not summing over the number of sticks?
Right, right. We sum over any configurations that have R sticks. So yeah, we sum, yes. R is not fixed. We sum over configuration of sticks, and R is the number of sticks. So we sum over all configurations. OK, if you want, you can put an extra sum behind. Okay, let's do the following. We sum over configurations of sticks, remove R, there's no R. We sum over all configurations, and then we define R is the number of sticks of my configuration. Yeah, okay, is it okay? Or keep R there and sum over R, it's the same. Now, so here is what we concluded. We conclude that the partition function, let's copy here again, of the Gaussian model is equal to the sum over configurations of sticks, right? And then we have product over I and j, t to this product. So what happens? T becomes raised to the total number of sticks, right? So here there will be t to the r, where r is the total number of sticks. And then there will be a product over I and j, 1 over nij factorial, and product over I, ni minus 1 double factorial. And I want to emphasize again that we know generalizations of this. This would be m ni for other models. We can easily come back and just put m and I here, and we have all this other high temperature expansion of other models. Right? Now, before we go on, let's make an important observation, which is that x to the n is equal to the number of ways of contracting n endpoints. Let's see what I mean by this. So x to the n, suppose I think of x to the n, we think of this as n points, right? 1, 2, up to n. And then I say that I want to connect these endpoints. So let's see how it works. So one, I want to connect it. How many options there are to connect one? N minus one options, right? So I contract here, and there are n minus one options. Then I go to the next one that is free. In this case, it's two. How many options are there to connect two? n minus 3, because 1 and this guy are already used. So I connect this guy, and there are n minus 3 options. And so on. You go on, n minus 1, n minus 3, and so on. And this is, of course, n minus 1 double factorial. So n minus 1 double factorial, as the interpretation, is the number of ways if I have n endpoints of connecting them. Okay? So this will play a role in what we are going to do now. Okay? So that's the interpretation of this number. This number has a nice combinatorial interpretation as, if I have ni points, how many ways there are of connecting them? Okay? So let me already give you a hint of why this will be important. Because suppose I have a bunch of sticks, right? I have a bunch of sticks like this. So these are a bunch of sticks, for example, like this. So these are sticks. This is site I. Right? And in this case, what would be ni for this example? 6, right? And now you see that sticks and paths are not the same thing, right? Sticks and paths, we said that when we have sticks, we have to connect them to make a path, right? Now, when you have a configuration like this, there's no problem, right? This, if you want to make it into a path, you just make it into a path. But what about here? How do we do? How do we, when we will try to connect these stick configurations into paths, how are we going to do here? And the answer is, there are more than one option. There are many options. For example, I can have a path where this goes like this, this goes like this, and this goes like this. This is one path. But there are many paths, many ways of resolving this into paths, right? And therefore, you see that almost obviously, if the weight is such that the weight is related to the number of ways of connecting these endpoints, I'm guaranteed that each configuration of sticks will be a sum of configuration of paths. So if a configuration of sticks comes with a weight which is 5, if there are 5 ways of reconnecting this, that's good. Because then when I write sum over paths, I get the right number. You see? So this, one path out of m and I possibilities. And so this, the fact that this is true, this is why we can go from sum over sticks to sum over paths. With the correct counting. That's crucial. And that's what I'm going now to show you now, right? Because the claim, remember, the claim is that this is equal. So this is our goal, I remind you, is to say that this is equal to exponential of 1/2 t to the length of my closed path, sum over all closed paths. Right? That's our goal, is to establish this. Right? And therefore, and these combinatorial factors are crucial. So the first crucial observation is that an I odd imply weight equal to 0, right? So at each point, the analog of saying that the sum over sticks, like in the Ising model, there can be no open ends, remember? Now it's the statement there can be no odd number of ends. Right? So it means that a configuration of sticks like this is good. A configuration of sticks like this where 4 meet at a point is good. A configuration where 2 meet at a point is good. But a configuration where 3 meet at a point is not good, it gives 0. A configuration where there is an endpoint gives 0. A configuration where there are 3 endpoints, or maybe 5, it's 0 and so on. Okay? So we sum over configurations. So the sum over configurations with sum of configurations with ni even, because ni odd gives 0. So what type of configurations do we sum over? Let's draw here some examples. Let's draw a lattice. So now we have to use color, because otherwise. So an example could be, for example, one stick is not possible, but we could have a square. So that's an example, right? One stick at each position, and I would be 2 for each side. Another possibility, though, would be 2 sticks here, for example. This would also be okay. Remember, this is something we did not have in the Ising model. In the Ising model, we had 1 stick or 0 sticks. But this one is also good, right? This one is also fine. Another possibility would be something like this, for example, like an 8 shape. Oops, sorry. Right? This 8 shape is also good, right? Ni is equal to 2 at each side, except in the middle, where Ni is equal to 4. Right? We could also have this configuration, for example. Could I have this? No, because why? Why can't I have this?
Ni equals 3.
Ni is equal to 3 here, but I can put 2 sticks here, right? So if I put 2 sticks here, then this is okay?
Yeah.
Right? That we can do. We can also have, let's do a last one, for example, 2 sticks here. So there are 2 sticks here, 1, 1. Okay, so two sticks here, 1, 1, 1, 1. That's also possible. That's an example of a configuration that would contribute. And it could be this configuration, which has 4 disconnected components. Each of them does contribute. Okay, so let's actually work out these 4 examples that we have here in the blackboard to see. So the claim is that this is equal. Right? Let's check that this is compatible with this claim. That this is equal to the exponential of the sum t to the length with a 1/2, and then just a single closed path. A single closed path that could be, for example, this. Now there is a single closed path, and we put the 1/2, so orientation matters. So it could be this path plus other paths. But just a single one, we just take exponential of a single path, and the claim is that when I bring down the exponent, I get product of paths, and I get all the configurations, and that's the combinatorics we want to check. So we want to check that this and this work. Okay. So it's possible to write a general combinatorical explanation, but I think it's much more instructive to work on a few examples because we really see how things are working. Okay. So let's work out first some examples. So first, so empty, if I have an empty lattice, so r equal to 0, right? Totally empty, then the weight is just 1, right? The weight is just 1, and that's fine, that works, right? If I take this exponential when the length is 0, I expect if this thing is equal indeed to 1 plus dot dot dot, right? When I expand in t, So the term, the leading term is just empty. Okay, that's boring. Second example, let's work out the second example. When my configuration, when our configuration is a single square like this of sticks. Okay, let's erase this because remember, these are just sticks. So like this. What's the weight? Well, let's see. So we have Nij equal to 1. And here we have Ni equal to 2. Right? So 2, this 2 becomes a 1 double factorial. That's equal to 1. By this I mean this is M2, the weight when I have 2. Right? Which is, remember, totally logical. I have 2 points. How many ways there are of connecting? There's only one. Right? So of course there's only one, which means that when I have these 2 points, I just connect them. So the fact that there is only way of connecting is this one here. Right? So there's no ambiguity in how to connect the points in this case. And then I have this Nij equal to 1. And therefore, 1 over 1 factorial is also equal to 1, right? We have the product over all links, 1 over 1 factorial. And so in total, this weight is just t to the 4 times 1, right? The number of sticks is 4, and all other factors are 1, because Nij is 1 and Ni is 2, right? And this is good because this one, we think that it is 1/2 times 2. Why 1/2 times 2? This 2 would be saying that in terms of paths, I have this path or this path, if we count orientation. And we said that if we count orientation, we do 1/2 of t to the length, and there are the two paths, one orientation or the other orientation, right? So here, notice there are arrows, there are no arrows. So that's okay. So that's what we would get if we would write this term, we'll get t to the 4, because this guy and the other one give the same thing, and I expand down and I get t to the 4, okay? So this one, so these two works. Let's do another example. Let's do the example of 2 sticks. Right? Now, what's the weight for 2 sticks? We can do directly the full weight. So t to the number of sticks is t squared. Right? And now, what about the weight? So here, what is Ni for this configuration? 2. So from the point of view of Ni, I get no factor. In other words, there is no ambiguity in connecting the endpoints. I just have to connect them like this and like this. But Nij is 2 now, right? So from the 1 over Nij factorial, I get 1/2, right? And so instead of 1, I get 1/2. And that's okay, right? So now we get just 1/2 because we don't have 2 options. Now I just have the path that goes and comes back. That's a closed path, but it's the same thing. There's no such thing as 2 orientations, right? Because I just go and I come back, right? So there's no thing. If you flip the orientation, it's the same path. It's not 2 different paths. So now I don't want to cancel the 1/2, and that's perfect. That's what I get. Right? It works. So this, there's no such thing as this or. Now it is just 1/2, and indeed that's what we get. So we did already 2 examples. Let's imagine we have a configuration now. Let's do another example where I have a square somewhere and then another square somewhere far away. What's this weight?
Negative
What's the weight? So how many sticks I have? 8, so t to the 8. And then, is there anything which is not 1? What is ni? What's the number of sticks going to each side? 2, right? So all ni are equal to 2 or 0, if it's empty, right? These guys are empty. And so from this factor, we get just 1, right? 1, because, and again, it's just a story that I have these endpoints, there's no ambiguity in connecting, it's obvious how to connect. And all nij are equal again to 0 or 1, so the overall factor from the nijs is also equal to 1, so it is just this times 1. Okay? Now let's see that this one works as well. Because what we are saying is that we get exponential. We are saying that the partition function should be exponential, and let's write what we are predicting. We are saying that it should be 1/2 times t squared times the loops like this, plus, then we said that there was t to the 4 times the loop like this, plus dot, dot, dot. And this was working. When we expand down, we get t to the 4. That was there. When we expand this down, we get t squared with 1/2. And now, when we expand down this, we get, let's look at the term with two squares. We get 1 over 2 factorial times the product of these two squares. Times just this term square. If this is 1, by this I mean the product of this term, 1 square. That would be the contribution of this loop. But you see that this contribution here, right, it could happen anywhere on the lattice. So when I expand down, I have this configuration, right? But I should sum over all possible positions. So I also have the one where they are just swapped. That cancels the 1 over 2 factorial, right? And therefore, I get weight 1. Is it clear? Because this configuration where 1 square is here and 1 square is here, right, comes with weight 1 because it was 1/2 times summation over everything. And so this term and this term, they just come from the two terms in the sum. And so, right, when I sum, they are indistinguishable. So this configuration appears like this, and it appears when I swap them, when I sum over positions, and that cancels the 1/2. And therefore, we expect that the configuration with two squares comes with weight 1. And this one is just 1/2 times 2 again, which is just the fact that I have the two independent squares that can be anywhere. And therefore, they should just come with coefficient 1 because there is this configuration and the one where they are swapped when I expand down the exponent.
Why this term is nothing to do with orientation? Like, why the two squares can't have different orientation?
They can. But each of one can have this or the opposite. This gives 1, this or the opposite, that gives 1. And then I'm doing the combinatorics of the indistinguishable loops.
I'm saying, like, what if one is counterclockwise and one is clockwise? Like,
here I drew both clockwise, but it could be both things. If you want, it's 1/2 because there are two loops. 2 because we can swap them, and that gives a factor of 2. And if you want, there was times 1, but this 1 secretly, it's 1/2 times 2 times 1/2 times 2, because each square can have this orientation or this, right? Sorry, this or this orientation, and each one with 1/2. Right? So for each individual square, for each individual loop, there is always, it's always 1 because it's 1/2 times one orientation, 1/2 times the opposite orientation. So So each of them already comes with one, but that we did already. We already explained that this one is secretly a summation of two orientations. Now that I already used this, I put two of these together. And now it's I don't look at orientation anymore. That we studied already. Now it's about this configuration versus the other one. And because we expand from the exponent, we have both. And so they appear twice, and this cancels the 1 over 2 factorial. So the fact that they come with one is exactly the statement that they are indistinguishable. It's when you look at loops, if I see one loop here and one loop here, I count it once. I don't count it twice because they swap. I count it once. And that comes about from the exponential precisely because the exponential contains a 1/2, and then I integrate over and I get a 2. Right? That's exactly how this exponential works for indistinguishable particles. Okay.
Can you explain again why that 1/2 factor in the teacher before? I mean, they choose because of the two orientations, but the 1/2?
No, the 1/2 is from here.
All right, from the definition.
From the definition. So we want to check if this works. So there is always a 1/2, and then there are two orientations, so it should give 1/2 times 2, which is 1.
Aren't we doing the opposite? Like, we're trying to sum the other side to get this? Like,
oh, we are checking. We are seeing that the weight is compatible with this expression. We are seeing that the weights can be interpreted like this.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Sorry, where does the 1/2 t squared come from in the exponent?
This 1/2 t squared, so that was this configuration we computed, right?
Why do you need to put in for the 2 squared?
No, I don't need. I'm saying z is the sum of all possible closed loops, right? So I'm right. I'm writing 2. There are many more terms here that I'm not writing. But then I'm focusing on a particular term, right? I want to make sure that each term, so let me stress again. Here I have infinitely many terms. Here I have infinitely many terms. The rule of the game is for each term here, it should come from one term here with the right coefficient. Right? That's what we are checking. We are seeing that so far we did a few examples of terms that definitely appear here. And we said, yes, it does come from this expression with the right coefficients. Okay? Is it clear? Okay, so
The 1/2 and the third example there, where did it come from for this omega?
For this omega?
Yeah.
This came from here because there is nij here is equal to 2. And in the weight, whenever there is an nij, there is a 1 over nij factorial. So nij being 2 gives 1 over 2.
So basically, when you're writing a partition function, you're summing over all closed paths.
Yes.
Of different lengths, though?
Yes. Yes. We sum over all paths, and we weight the path with t to the length of the path. And this path can be here, can be in any position. So for example, this path will also come with a factor of volume because it can happen in many, many positions. Yes?
Yeah.
Okay, so far, we did only paths that were unambiguous, right? All the paths we did were unambiguous. So let's just do one more unambiguous example. Example 5, for example, this. What weight would this come? See, for that matter, any path like this. So if any path that like this, for example, like this, any path like this, this path, say, I want to say it comes with an obvious weight because each ni is 2 and each nij is 1, so the weight is just 1 for all such paths. And 1 is always 2 times 1/2. So when we have paths like this or well-separated paths, it's clear that the combinatorics are going to work out. Because whenever I have a path that there is no self-intersections, it's one, the weight, which is 2 times 1/2. And then I multiply 2 and it's still 1, which is 1/2 times 2, because I can put them in both positions, right? And therefore, for sure, it's going to work out the combinatorics. So the challenge is when we have ambiguity in reconnecting the dots. If we don't have ambiguity, it's clear that whatever number I get from here is going to be the correct number that comes from here. The challenge is when we have configurations, the interesting thing are configurations like this, this, or this. These are the interesting ones where there is some ambiguity in going from sticks to paths. Right? So these guys, these ones, are the interesting ones. The other ones, it's trivial to see that if I have a bunch of disconnected paths where there is no ambiguity, it is just the exponential of a single path with the weight 1/2. Okay? So let's work out some of these interesting ones. So okay, let's do it here. Let's work out some of these interesting paths in the remaining 10 minutes. So let's do this 8 shape one. What do we get for this 8 shape? Now, this is 2, this is 1, this is 2, right? There are 2 S's at this point and so on. But the interesting here is here, where N is equal to, at this vertex, how many spins there are? 4. And therefore, what's the weight of this configuration? Well, there is t to the length, that's trivial, so it's t to the power 8, right? There are 8 sticks. But what's interesting is, what's the weight? Times what? So 1 and 2 are trivial, right? 1 factorial is 1, and 1 double factorial is 1. So the only thing that contributes is this guy, right? So this is also 1. So the only thing interesting is this vertex here. And this vertex gives which factor? The fact that I have n equals 4 changes, gives me that this factor is?
3.
Do you agree? So there's only 3. It comes exactly from this 4. And again, what is this 3? This 3 is the number of ways of reconnecting that vertex. It's this plus this. Plus this. It's the number of ways of going to this vertex and resolving this cross, saying this cross in terms of paths can be this, this, or this. Right? And therefore, once we realize this, we can think that this configuration, this 8 shape, so let's draw it first with sticks, so we don't reconnect the points. We say that this can be equal to, if I reconnect using that, it becomes this. This is this term. If I reconnect with that, it becomes this. And if I connect with that, it becomes this. Right? Do you agree? It is just reconnecting those terms. And what are we getting? We are getting that it's 3. So we say that it's this guy with weight 1, this guy with weight 1, this guy with weight 1. Right? But this is perfect. Why is this perfect? Because this guy, we wanted to say it's 1/2 plus 1/2 from both orientations, so 1. This guy, we wanted to say it's 1/2 plus 1/2, so total weight 1. And this guy, it's the one we did here, that we want. We like the one as well, because there is these 2 squares, and the other one where the squares are swapped. So we also like 1, because it's 1/2, because they are indistinguishable. Right? So all these weights are exactly as it should be. Right? So now you start seeing that you could have started from the walks, right? You could start from the walks, and if you want to reproduce the model, It's at this point that you have to say, I want the average of four spins to give three. Right? Because I want the average of four spins to have the interpretation of these three connections. Right? And that's how you would go not from the Gaussian model to the walks, but from the walks to the Gaussian model. You would start learning about what distribution do I need. I need a distribution that when I have three, when I have four spins, gives me a factor of three. And now I need, my average should give expectation value of s to the 4 should give 3. Right? And if you know all the moments of the distribution, you know what the model is, and you would derive in this way the Gaussian model by doing enough examples. Okay? So this example is working, and let's work a few more examples. So let's work the other example there. Let's work the two squares, the two configuration of sticks that are one configuration on top of the other. One square, so we have this, let's draw first sticks. This. So what weight do we get now? By now you should be experts. What weight do we get? How many sticks are there? 8, so t to the 8, right? How many factors, what combinatorics do we get from the nij's factorial, from the 1 over nij factorial? 1 over nij factorial, if nij is 0 or 1, we don't care, it's 1. So we only care when nij is 2 or more. So which factor do we get from the 1 over nij factorial? 1 half from this guy, times a half. This half is from the nij. And from the ni, what factor do we get? From the ni, again, we only care when there is ambiguity in reconnecting, right? So we only care when ni is 4 or more. Right? So we have here ni is 2, it's trivial, ni is 2, the weight is 1. Here ni is 4, and here ni is 4, right? And when ni is 4, we get weight 3, because there are 3 ways of reconnecting here. So 3 times 3, so 9, right? So 3 double factorial square. And so in total, we get 9 halves. Okay? So let's check that this works. Okay, so again, what we are doing, this 3, is saying that when I have these lines like this, right, I can write it as there is this term, there is this term, and there is this term. Right? I just connect this in the 3 possible ways. And therefore, we see that this configuration, in terms of paths, depending on how I reconnect, could become the following. Let me write it, and then we see if we agree. It could become 2 paths like this. Right? If I use this up and this down. Right? Depending on how I connect up and down, if I connect one up like this and one down like this, it could also become a path like this. Like an 8 shape, but like this. It could also become a path like this. It could also become a path like this. And finally, there's one more option. Which one?
The third one switched.
The third one switched is this.
Yeah.
There's one more missing.
Just the external loop.
Exactly. And then there's the last one where I have the external loop and we have the inside. Okay. And let's see, what weight would we like to put? Now let's not look at the result. Let's try to do an honest counting of weights. What weight would you like to put for this configuration? In terms of loops. So it's the 2 squares. What's the weight? 1, right? We already agreed several times. 2 squares, 1 half times 2, 1 half times 2, 1 half times 2, 1. Plus, what about this? What factor do you want for this path? So it's a path, so it comes with one orientation or the other orientation. So in total, the weight should be 1. 1 half times 2, 1. What factor do you want to put for this path? There's one orientation, there is the other orientation, so 1. What weight do you want to put to this factor? 1. What weight do you want to put for this factor?
1 plus half.
Not plus, but almost. So here, outside, I have one orientation or the other, so 1. But here inside, it's the same, right? I go up and down. So for this graph, I want a 1 half factor, 1 half times 1. I want them to be this kind of. And so I get 1 plus 1 plus 1 plus 1 plus 1 half. That's equal to 9 halves. Right? And that's exactly what we said it should be. Okay? So that works precisely to get the correct 9 halves. Okay, just let's do one more example and we finish. For example, this configuration. Now we are experts. So what would be the weight for this configuration? What's the total length?
6.
So t to the 6. And what's the weight? So again, from the point of view of nij's, the only thing we care is if nij is bigger than 1. So there's only 1 here. So from the point of view of nij is 1 half. And from the point of view of ni, I only care when there is ambiguity in reconnecting, which is here. So 4, so times 3. Do you agree? Just these 3 halves. And let's see that this example also works. In terms of paths, what could this be? It could be this path, right? Or it could be this path. Right? And what weight would we assign? Here there are 2 possible orientations, this or this. So the weight here would be 1, right? 1 half plus 1 half. And here it's the product of 1 times 1 half. So for this it would be 1 half. So it also works. So, as I tried to promise, so this would be, it's of course possible to just write down a complicated, to write down to show that this is equal to this, but I think by now it's pretty obvious. So we just established by exhaustion this, we just proved by exhaustion that this is a true duality of between the summation over closed paths and the partition function of the azimuth. Furthermore, we know it's true because we computed both quantities and there was an equal sign. So of course it works, there's no doubt, because we computed this expression and it gave exactly the expression that is there, right? And so we see that again, the punchline is that it's true, and key to make this work key to make this work is the fact that our interpretation of the expectation value of x to the n in our distribution mu was the number of ways of contracting n endpoints. Right? So in the Isaac model, for example, instead we get weight 1, right? So for example, for the Ising model, nothing of this would work. For Ising model, instead of 3, for Ising, this would be 1, right? So in Ising, this configuration is there, but it comes with 1. And then we have to understand 1, but I have these 3 paths, so how can I get 1 if I have 1 plus 1 plus 1? And like we said in one of the lectures, the idea is to try to flip some sign to minus in Ising model so that I get 1 plus 1 minus 1, that gives 1. So right now we are happy with us with the adding up the paths and it gets the right number. But in Ising, instead of this weight, we just get weight 1. So we have to say the way to get weight 1 is you still sum over all the paths, but many of them cancel against each other because of this winding number. So we put a minus sign because these guys have winding and this one has no winding. It winds and unwinds. And in the Ising model, that's how we will make contact between partition function of Ising model and sum over paths with winding, because we will have to fix these weights. So the fact that we go from Mn equal to n minus 1 double factorial for Gaussian, and that's the number of ways of reconnecting, and this gives random walks. And then Mn is just equal to 1 for Ising, and this would mean that I will have walks with winding, where winding matters, and that's how I get rid of these big factors, because these winding factors will cancel paths so that I can have any chance of reproducing the right combinatorics. Okay, so I ended up not having time to do most of the things that I wanted to do today, but that's okay. So the problem is the tutorial. So the tutorial, yeah, the introduction to the tutorial will be a little bit tough, so. But maybe not, no? It's summarized there.
It's very long.
Yeah, so. Yeah, okay. You will have to spend like 15 minutes reading the introduction of the tutorial and so on. So I don't have time to give an introduction to the tutorial. So, but any question here about this combinatorics? I have the feeling that some steps were a little bit too fast for some people. I don't know if.
Yeah.
If you want to ask about some particular step or is it now clear how things are working? You want?
Thanks for the huge amount of examples.
Sorry?
Yeah.
The examples were made it clear? Yeah.
Yeah. So is there a prettier way of doing this than checking everything?
Well, I think with some experience, you look at this and you say this is true because you see, well, I have this factorial. Ah, if you think of, in other words, if in your brain you can do in parallel all the examples and see, yeah, it's definitely going to work. Because it's just about reconnecting. It's just that if I have sticks, it's almost closed loops. And furthermore, whenever I have ambiguity, I multiply by the factor that takes into account the ambiguity of reconnecting. Of course, by definition, it's going to give me the right number. So, I mean, it's obvious. Once you realize that it works, you look and say, oh, come on. It was obvious from the beginning because this took into account how many ways there are to reconnect. So it's more or less obvious. So, I think it's trivial.
Yeah. No, it's
you see, this is number of ways of reconnecting, right? And what about this? This is just saying that when I have many parallel lines, there are many configurations that are the same because they differ by just reshuffling those lines. When I say I go like this and I go up using the first stick, or I go up using the second stick, that's equivalent. There's no distinction between the sticks, right? So this makes sure that I don't count configurations, that I count configurations once when I go up and then do whatever I want, and it doesn't matter which stick I use. And this takes into account the fact that reconnections of sticks are properly accounted. Once you realize this is a true, the rest is true. Then it means that it's just a sum of closed paths which are not interacting. Yeah, that's it. Yeah.